Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 18, text 18. Sutuvacha. Aho vayam janma pritodhya hamsa. Aho vayam janma pritodhya hasma. Vrithanu vrityapi viloma jata. Vrithanu vrityapi viloma jata. Toskuyam adem virunoti signam. Toskuyam adem virunoti sigram. Mahatmanam abhidana yoga. Mahatmanam abhidana yoga. Sutuvacha. Aho vayam janma pritodhya hasma. Vridanu vrityapi valoma jata. Doskulyam adem virunoti sigram. Mahatmanam abhidana yoga. Others, please. Sutu vacha. Ranjana Brita. Vaishnavis.
Thank you.
Suta Uvacha. Suta Goswami said, Aho, how? Vayam, we. Janmabrata, promoted in birth. Adya, today. Ha, clearly. Asma, have become. Vrita anuvritya, by serving those who are advanced in knowledge. Api, although. Vilomajata, born in a mixed caste. Dushkalam, disqualification of birth. Adhim, sufferings. Vidhunoti, purifies. Sigram, very soon. Mahatamanam, of those who are great. Abhidana, conversation. Yoga, connection. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Suta Goswami said, O God, although we are born in a mixed caste, we are still promoted in birthright simply by serving and following the great who are advanced in knowledge. Even by conversing with such great souls, one can without delay cleanse oneself of all disqualifications resulting from lower births. Purport. Suta Goswami did not take his birth in a Brahmana family. He was born in a family of mixed caste, or an uncultured low family. But because of higher association, like Srila Sukadeva Goswami and the great rishis of Naimisharanya, certainly the disqualification of inferior birth was washed off. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed this principle in pursuance of the Vedic usages, and by his transcendental association he elevated many low-born, or those disqualified by birth or action, to the status of devotional service and established them in the position of acharyas or authorities. He clearly stated that any man, whatever he may be, whether a brahmana or a sudra by birth or a householder or mendicant in the order of society, if he is conversant with the science of Krishna, he can be accepted as an acharya or guru, a spiritual master. Suta Goswami learned the science of Krishna from great rishis and authorities like Sukadeva and Vyasadeva, and he was so qualified that even the sages of Naimisharanya eagerly wanted to hear from him the science of Krishna in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he had the double association of great souls by hearing and preaching. Transcendental science, or the science of Krishna, has to be learned from authorities, and when one preaches the science, he becomes still more qualified. So Suta Goswami had both the advantages, and thus undoubtedly he was completely freed from all disqualifications of low birth and mental agonies. This verse definitely proves that Srila Sukadeva Goswami did not refuse to teach Suta Goswami about the transcendental science, nor did the sages of Naimisharanya refuse to hear lessons from him because of his inferior birth. This means that thousands of years ago, there was no bar to learning or preaching the transcendental science because of inferior birth. The rigidity of the so-called caste system in Hindu society became prominent within only 100 years or so, when the number of dvija bandhus, or disqualified men, in the families of higher caste increased. Lord Sri Chaitanya revived the original Vedic system, and he elevated Thakur Haridas to the position of Namacharya, or the authority in preaching the glories of the holy name of the Lord. Although His Holiness Srila Haridas Thakur was pleased to appear in a family of Mohammedans. Such is the power of pure devotees of the Lord. The Ganges water is accepted as pure, and one can become purified after taking a bath in water of the Ganges. But as far as the great devotees of the Lord are concerned, they can purify a degraded soul even by being seen by the low-born, and what to speak of association. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to purify the whole atmosphere of the polluted world by sending qualified preachers all over the world, and it remains with the Indians to take up this task scientifically and thus do the best kind of humanitarian work. The mental diseases of the present generation are more acute than bodily diseases. It is quite fit and proper to take up preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world without delay. Mahatmanam Abhidhana also means dictionary of great devotees, or a book full of the words of great devotees. Such a dictionary of the words of great devotees and those of the Lord are in the Vedas and allied literature, specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam. Omaginata Madanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadam Tikam. So, there's a lot of important points that Prabhupada makes here in this purport, and I'm going to try to work through it again so I can systematically address, highlight some of the points that really came to my mind as struck me as particularly important. So Prabhupada says, Suta Goswami did not take his birth in a Brahmana family. He was born in a family of mixed caste or an uncultured low family. So I think due to karma in a class he gave recently mentioned he was in a Pratiloma family, Suta Goswami, which means his mother was a Brahmana, but his father was a Kshatriya, which is not as good as an Anuloma family. Anuloma family would have been if his father was a Brahmana and his mother was a Kshatriya. Either way, it's considered less than ideal, and the Pratiloma is even less ideal than the Anuloma family. So his mother was a Brahmana, his father was a Kshatriya. It's considered, and Prabhupada actually refers to it here as not just as mixed caste, but an uncultured low family. That's how it was viewed, understood. But he had the association of Srila Tsukadeva Goswami and the sages of Naimisharanya, and as a result of that, his disqualification and inferior birth was washed off. So, that's a big point that of this purport that anybody, and Prabhupada goes on to talk about how Lord Chaitanya, he followed the same principle. And we have that famous statement by Lord Chaitanya, Yare Deke Tare Kara Krishna Upadesh Amara Agyaya Guduhana Tare Edesh. He gave the instruction that to that, it was Korma the Brahman, in that past on Korma, the Brahman wanted to, he was a householder, he was a Brahman, and he was a householder, and he wanted to give up his family life and just travel with Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya told him, no, what you should do is you stay where you are and you become guru here. And, wherever you are, and that's when he gave that famous instruction, wherever you are, whoever you meet, you instruct them in the science of Krishna and in this way become a spiritual master and deliver everybody. So the point being that what's important is the quality of Krishna consciousness, the Krishna consciousness of the person, and not the social status or the social standing. And by social standing, Suta Goswami should have not been eligible to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, in one sense, and we're not eligible to explain it to the sages of Naimisharanya, who are elevated sages. But he was fortunate. He got that good association. He became purified. He became purified, and as a result, that more than counteracted the disqualification of his inferior birth. And this point was, as I said, further exemplified by, and Prabhupada points this out in the purport about Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya made Haridas Thakur the Namacharya. He's the authority of chanting the holy names. But he was born in a Mohammedan family, as Prabhupada mentions later in the purport. Another example of that, which Prabhupada doesn't specifically mention in the purport, but sort of refers to, is Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy was, he was a governor, but I think it was like he was considered a sudra. So it was like an administrative type of, he wasn't a Kshatriya. But Lord Chaitanya, who was born in a Brahmin family and was a sannyasi, heard from Ramananda Roy. He inquired from Ramananda Roy about confidential topics of Krishna consciousness. So, setting another further precedent that what's important is the person's Krishna consciousness, not the person's social position. And Prabhupada says here in towards the end of this paragraph, he says, is clearly stated, any man, whatever he may be, Brahmin, Sudra, by birth, or householder, mendicant, in order of the society, if he is conversant with the science of Krishna, he can be accepted as Acharya or Guru, spiritual master. So what does it mean to be conversant with the science of Krishna? That's an important point. To be conversant means to be knowledgeable, with the dictionary definition, but it means to be more than just familiar with the ideas. For somebody to be really conversant with the science of Krishna consciousness, I think what Prabhupada is referring to here, what we're meant to understand, is that person should know the philosophy, he should be practicing the philosophy, and hopefully, ideally, have made some progress in realizing the philosophy. You know, should be at a point where that the gyan, not only he has the gyan, he's applying the gyan, and that gyan is being transformed into vigyan. That's the person who should be accepted as a acharya, guru, spiritual master, ideally. Because the more that person has those qualifications, then the more then the people who take shelter of him are going to be able to benefit. It's in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a verse, can't remember the whole verse, but I know there's one phrase where it refers to these two qualifications as Shrotriyam, Brahmanishnam. That's two qualifications of a guru. He should be Shrotriyam, which means he's heard from the authorities, as is mentioned here in this purport, and he's Brahmanishnam. He's fixed in Brahman. Not that he just... Sorry? Yeah, thank you. And so he has both those qualifications. You know, he more than just has the academic or theoretical, you know, understanding. He's realized to a certain degree. And so we're all meant to try to, to become like that, actually. That's another point that, you know, that's the kind of person we should be looking for to take shelter of, to help us advance in devotional service. And ultimately, and ideally, we're all meant to become gurus of some sort. There's three types of gurus. There's a Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru, and a Vartma Pradakshina Guru. And Lord Chaitanya, when he gave that instruction, he didn't specify, but all members of the Krishna consciousness movement should be thinking, like, at some point in time, I got to, you know, get my act together enough to become some sort of a guru. If I, you know, at least a Vartma Pradakshina Guru, I should at least become qualified enough, you know. And the qualification, once again, is that you're following strictly and sincerely, because then you'll have spiritual potency. So when you meet other people, they'll become inspired, they'll become attracted, they'll become willing to engage in devotional service in the way you're wanting them to engage in devotional service. It's a spiritual qualification. It's not a material thing. At least certainly to do it successfully and over a long period of time, it's not a material thing, because the nature of the mode of passion is you can do it for a while, and maybe somebody on some material qualification might be able to attract people in some way or another, but to do it over a prolonged period of time, you know, and in a very competent, successful way, that means some Krishna's there, Krishna's in the picture there. So, and that's a very important thing for a devotee to aspire for. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, and this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita verse, it says, in a section about Narada Muni, where he's talking about how Narada Muni was a touchstone. So it goes, there's a sentence here where it says, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that the position of a Vaishnava can be tested by seeing how good a touchstone he is. That is, by seeing how many Vaishnavas he has made during his life. So, I'll just read a bit more. Vaishnava should be a touchstone so that he can convert others to Vaishnavism by his preaching, even though people may be fallen like the hunter. So anyway, so that's something to keep in mind, that we should have that as a goal. That's something we should be aspiring for, to become sparshamanis. That's the phrase that's used here later in the purport. It's a touchstone, so that when people meet us, they become interested in Krishna consciousness. That's an important point. And then Prabhupada goes on to say how the sages of Suta Goswami, He learned the science from both from Sukadev Goswami, and the sages of Naimisharanya eagerly wanted to hear from him the science of Krishna in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. And when I read that, that struck me as particularly significant, because it's one thing to be a student of somebody, you know, I mean, to be a student of somebody like Sukadev Goswami is, you know, pretty significant, but the fact that the sages of Naimisharanya wanted to hear from him, that's particularly significant, because, I mean, they were sages. You know, they weren't just any old guys off the street. These were already elevated sages, and they wanted to hear from Sukadev Goswami, so that further attests to his, you know, spiritual qualification, that these great sages were eager to hear from him. And let's see. Well, yeah, further on from that point, so what was his, we know that his disqualification, Prabhupada mentions in his purport here some, what was not his disqualification, and he mentions a couple things that was a qualification. What was not his disqualification was his low birth. And what was his qualification? That he was fortunate to have the good association of both Sukadev Goswami as his preceptor, spiritual master, and the sages of Naimisharanya. But, you know, in addition to that, he evolved. He became himself a very elevated devotee. And he had an intense desire to engage in devotional service. There's a very nice verse. Actually, I don't have it printed out here. Okay, it looks like I didn't print it out. But it's a famous verse about how the only qualification for pure devotional service is the intense desire for it. So he had that, you know, he was a devotee on a high level of Krishna consciousness. And that's why, you know, that's why they were eager to hear from him. And that was a further qualification he had. And the Prabhupada also points out here in the purport that it says, transcendental science, or the science of Krishna, has to be learned from authorities. And when one preaches the science, he becomes still more qualified. So why is that? Well, there's different aspects to that. One is practice makes perfect. You know, you learn a subject, and when you try to teach it to others, then you have to concentrate on it more. The knowledge becomes solidified when you attempt to teach it to other people, and that's part of it. But another aspect to this point that Prabhupada's making here is that he becomes still more qualified is that Krishna's pleased. Krishna's pleased. Not Krishna wants his devotees to try to make other people devotees. So when a devotee takes the initiative to try to help other people become devotees, then Krishna, who's within his heart, destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. That's an important point, I think. That, you know, in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me, and out of compassion for them, I, who am dwelling within their heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So when a devotee takes the initiative to try to fulfill the mission of the spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya, by trying to help other people become devotees, Krishna, who's is pleased. Krishna, who's within his heart, and destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And that's what my understanding of what it means to be still. That's how it is. He becomes still further qualified. It's Krishna reciprocating with that devotee's voluntary effort to, you know, do that service, which is what the whole Krishna conscious movement ultimately is all about, trying to help other people become Krishna conscious. So that's there. Then Prabhupada makes his point here about how the sages of Naimisharanya, Sukadev Goswami, he wasn't reluctant to teach Sudha Goswami, despite his inferior birth and the sages of Naimisharanya, weren't reluctant to hear from him for the same reason. And he makes the point that it's only in the last 100 years or so, well, now 150 years or so, that this the caste system, this idea of, you know, the rigidity of the so-called caste system in Hindu society has become prominent. So that's a sign of the degradation, actually. You know, people previously, as he said, thousands of years ago, they were more elevated in general, and they were fortunate. They could appreciate when somebody was, you know, acting on the spiritual platform. They could recognize that. They could acknowledge that. Whereas when, you know, if somebody in the mode of goodness, they have that, like, spiritual vision. And they could, you know, they're not seeing in terms of the material body. They're not, you know, they're seeing, they see all that, but what's more important to them is the spiritual qualification of the person. So people were able to recognize that previously, but as Kali Yuga progresses and people are becoming more and more influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, that vision is, you know, kind of disappearing gradually. That verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Vijana Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastani Suni Chaiva Supakicha Pandita Samadarshana, that the humble sage sees with equal vision the learned and gentle Brahmin, the cow, the dog. That's, as time goes on, that's going to be less and less and less. People are going to be able to, you know, even people who are familiar with this knowledge are going to be able to do that. That vision is kind of, unfortunately, in the general population, pretty much non-existent. And even among devotees, we have to really try to make an effort to relate to other living entities according to that description there in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Then Prabhupada makes this point here about how the pure devotee is even, in one sense, more powerful as a purifying agent than even the Ganges, because he says the Ganges water is pure, and one becomes purified by taking bath in the water of the Ganges. But as far as the great devotees of the Lord are concerned, they can purify a degraded soul even by being seen by the lowborn. What to speak of association? So it's emphasizing the power, the exalted position of pure devotees. Is a very nice verse that, to that effect, that was, I think, said by Sanatan Goswami to, actually, I'm not sure who said it to who now that I come to think of it, but Prabhupada quoted, it's famous, it goes, Akshno palam twadrasa darshanam hi, tano palam twadrasa gatra sangha, jiva palam twadrasa kirtanam hi, sudulabha bhagavata hi loke. And the translation is, O devotee of the Lord, the purpose of the visual sense is fulfilled simply by seeing you. And to touch your body is the fulfillment of bodily touch. The tongue is meant for glorifying your qualities, because in this world, a pure devotee of the Lord is very difficult to find. So I'm not sure who said that to who. Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Lord Chaitanya said that to Sanatana Goswami. So that's, you know, the pure devotee is in a very exalted position. And, you know, one may think about, upon hearing this, though, that maybe this is... wow, is this like an exaggeration? You know, but no, it's not. Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada comments upon that in Nectar Devotion. He brings up the point that there's a statement by Rupa Goswami in some Vedic literature, I'm not sure which one, but he makes a statement about Mathura Mandala, and he says that anyone, if they even once go into the precincts of, you know, Mathura Vrindavan, that immediately, so anyone, even once, immediately will have transcendental sentiments aroused if they go to Mathura Vrindavan. So then Prabhupada, in the next paragraph, this is in the Nectar of Devotion, in the chapter about the five most potent forms of devotional service. And in the next paragraph, Prabhupada goes that it seems like sometimes maybe some of these statements appear to be an exaggeration. But he goes, but we shouldn't take it like that. He says they are. It is true. You know, these things do happen, and they happen to some devotees. Maybe not like all devotees all the time, but they do happen. And anyway, he makes the point that he does make this point that they are actual facts, but are true for certain devotees and not necessarily apply to all. Says these descriptions, even if considered exaggerations, must be taken as they are, in order to divert our attention from the fleeting material beauty to the eternal beauty of Krishna consciousness. And says for a person who's already in contact with Krishna consciousness, to describe results are not unusual. So the point being that it might sound like, okay, that's an exaggeration. Well, somebody could say, well, Prabhupada was here. A lot of people saw him. They didn't take to Krishna consciousness or continue with Krishna consciousness. So it seems like this statement's an exaggeration. But no, as stated here, these things are true. There were devotees who had that experience. And anybody who takes wholeheartedly to the process, as mentioned here, Prabhupada, in the last sentence, devotees who are in contact with Krishna consciousness, the results are not unusual. So if somebody takes to the process of Krishna consciousness and seriously and sincerely, then you know they will experience how these things are not exaggerations, but they're actually factual things, factual statements. But you have to surrender and get purified in order to have that realization. So let's see. Okay, and then Prabhupada makes the point here about, he says, Lord Chaitanya wanted to purify the whole atmosphere of the polluted world by sending qualified preachers all over the world, and it remains with the Indians to take up this task scientifically and thus do the best kind of humanitarian work. Well, there's that verse, Bharata Bhumite Hoila Manusha Janma, Janma Satakra Kara Pada Kara Upakara, that people have taken their birth in Bharat Varsha, Bharata. They have some sort of, and Prabhupada, sometimes you hear devotees say that Bharat Varsha means the whole earth, but there is a purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada specifically, he does kind of seem to say that being taken birth in India is some sort of a special opportunity, and so that's there. And fortunately, that seems to be happening to a certain extent. Our Krishna consciousness movement is flourishing in India, perhaps more so than any other part of the world. So that is going on, and even here in the West, we're reaping the benefits because so many of our congregational members are Indian people, and in some temples, like in ISKCON Silicon Valley, they're more than just congregational members. They're very active devotees who, in their own right, are preaching and pushing on the movement. So Lord Chaitanya's instruction is, we're seeing that the fulfillment of that to a certain extent. And the last point would be, Prabhupada says here, the Mahatmanam Abhidana also means dictionary of great devotees, or a book full of the words of great devotees. Such a dictionary of the words of great devotees and those of the Lord are the Vedas and Alavas, specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada's books is a perfect example of Mahatmanam Abhidana, a dictionary of the words of great devotees. And that's important because the words of a pure devotee are unlike the words of an ordinary person. They're pregnant with spiritual potency. And somebody, just by hearing the words of a pure devotee, can become inspired. Their dormant Krishna consciousness can be awakened. And that's the primary reason why Prabhupada emphasized so much and we're so keen about distributing books. Because Prabhupada's words, it's not just, people aren't just getting information when they get one of Prabhupada's books. They're getting spiritual potency. You know, those words are, as I said, they're pregnant with spiritual potency. And there's probably, countless devotees who, will tell you that that's the way that was their beginning in Krishna consciousness. I mean, not maybe every single devotee, but a lot of devotees. They just picked up some book that was Prabhupada's and you read it and it's just, ordinary words on a page there, but somehow or another that was the impetus you know, that was the beginning. That gave me the impetus and the inspiration to take further, look into Krishna consciousness further and go to a temple or start chanting or whatever. So that's really important point there, that to always bear in mind that these words are not ordinary words, and you know, just by reading one of these literatures, people get inspired to become devotees, to take up Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments here?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. My question is, our philosophy demands us to become servants of... Our philosophy demands us to become servants of the servant, but then there's also this other side of our philosophy that asks us to become the guru. And seemingly these seem like two contradictory points. I'm sure it's not, because everything can be reconciled with our philosophy. But could you maybe give an explanation of how those things aren't contradictory and how they're actually cooperative with each other?
Yeah, well, okay, sure. I mean, it's the mentality that which just counts. Prabhupada was guru. Prabhupada wasn't thinking of himself as master. He was thinking of himself as a servant of his spiritual master, and he was thinking of himself as a servant of the devotees who he was instructing in Krishna consciousness. So it's just a question of your consciousness. If somebody's in the right consciousness, if they have the right mentality, they can perform the service of being a leader in Krishna consciousness, be it a temple president or a guru or a GBC or sannyasi or whatever, and very much be doing it, understanding that it's a service they're performing. Somebody has to do that service. And so it's just a question of the person's mentality and consciousness. Archita wanted to say something.
I want to ask a question about, you made a statement that Sutta Goswami's birth was Pratyaloma. I just wonder where you got that from, because his father was Ramaharshana Sutta, who, as far as I know, is not a Kshatriya. He was a sage himself. He was entrusted with the Vedic knowledge. He was sitting on the seat of the Vyasasan before he was killed by Balaram. So I'm just wondering where you got the Pratyaloma.
I got that from the Krishna book.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't recall that.
And I thought I heard Judah Karma say it in a class he gave a few days ago. But yeah,
So Ramaharshana Sutta was a Kshatriya?
You know, I didn't read that, but I wrote it down, so I must have copied it right off of something.
Can you read the statement from the Krishna book? Can we hear? Do you have it there?
I'm pretty sure I didn't print that out. Let me see. I did print out something from the Krishna book, and so I see Pratyaloma. But it's in that. If you just type in Pratyaloma, it'll take you to the.
All right, I can search it later.
Yeah,
it just seems a little surprising.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Well, no, a Pratyaloma marriage is when the father is a Kshatriya and the mother is a Brahmana. So he said that was the case for Sutta Goswami.
Yeah.
That his father was a Kshatriya and his mother a Brahmana. But his father was Ramaharshana Sutta, who we know was a great sage. He was sitting on the Vyasasan giving instruction. He was entrusted with the Vedic knowledge.
Well,
so I don't recall hearing anywhere that he was a Kshatriya.
Maybe there's some background story there.
Maybe there is.
You know, I mean, he was pretty puffed up. He got killed by Lord Balaram.
Well, Brahmanas get puffed up also. It's not that only Kshatriyas get puffed up. I just don't recall anywhere seeing that Ramaharshana Sutta was a Kshatriya. We know Ramaharshana Sutta was the father of Sutta Goswami. So if it's a Pratyaloma marriage, that would mean that Ramaharshana Sutta was a Kshatriya and the mother was a Brahmana. But I don't recall seeing anywhere that Ramaharshana Sutta was a Kshatriya. So we'll look it up. We'll just get to the bottom.
Yeah, we'll look it up. I'm pretty sure I got it. Hopefully I got it right. Sure. A question first and then a comment.
Thank you, Prabhu. I have a question. Here is in the purpose, this verse definitely proves that Srila Sukadeva Goswami did not refuse to teach Sutta Goswami about the transcendental science, nor did the sages on Naimisaranya refuse to hear lessons from him because of his inferior birth. This means that thousands of years ago there was no bar to learning to learning or preaching the transcendental science because of inferior birth? That came to my mind. The question is, at that time, the very system is situated in such a way that I was thinking there were no women sitting down there. It's all sages. It's always all men. Nowadays, we're living in a different situation. We have centers all over the world, internationally. We're trying to reach people to come. The urgency is to bring women, bring men, whoever wants to learn, we want to teach. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you quote the verse, the famous verse, that whoever knows the teachings of Krishna should be able to become a guru. So now the question is, in your opinion, women can become gurus? Because in this verse, it's very...
I think the practical application of the essence is don't be on the bodily concept of life. We have to see who is enthusiastic to be take up devotional service. If somebody's enthusiastic to take up devotional service, they should be encouraged. If women come along, if somebody is enthusiastic about devotional service, they should be encouraged. We shouldn't evaluate people in terms of their body, or their social position. If somebody is demonstrating an eagerness for devotional service, that's what's important, and that should be, like, look, right in front of me, Ananda Kirtan. He came here as a homeless person, and, everybody could have thought, forget about this guy, man. He's disqualified, but he's like one of our best book distributors and preacher and, wonderful devotee. So it is an example of that. You got to have that vision. You got to try to have that vision of these are souls. There's a soul in the woman's body. Somebody's a soul in the man's body. Somebody's a soul in the black body, a white body, of this body, a poor body, a rich body. It doesn't matter. Is that soul wanting Krishna? If that soul's wanting Krishna, that's what you got to be able to see. And then if it is, then you got to try to work with that person and try to help them get Krishna. And as far as a woman becoming a guru, why not if she's qualified? The qualification has to be there. And we have a GBC. We have, like a lot of experienced, advanced, intelligent devotees. They're capable of understanding which women can actually proper. It's a very responsible service. So you just don't want to willy-nilly let anybody do it. But I think being a woman is not a disqualification from being a guru. Being a not advanced devotee would be a disqualification. But if a woman is an advanced devotee, why not? Judy Karma raised his hand there. Is it a question or a comment? Because... Okay.
This is from Krishna book about Rama Harshana. Lord Balaram then considered the history of Rama Harshana. Yeah. He was born in a Suta family, or a mixed family, born of a Brahmin woman and a Kshatriya man. So
he was not a proper Brahmana himself, so therefore... There you go. Yeah, thank you.
Just use, for example, a father. The father is a Kshatriya, and the mother is a Brahmin. They have a different word for that. But the word that was used for Sutta actually means what Dhritakarma just mentioned.
Mother's a Brahmin, and father's a Kshatriya.
I was going to, if I may have a moment to talk a little about just this. May I?
Yeah, sure.
It's very interesting because, as we know, in Mahabharata, Karna was considered a Suta, and he was raised in an area where Sutas were. I forget the name of that place. It might come back to me. The important thing is that, first of all, when there was the contest to gain Draupadi's hand, one of the reason she rejected Karna was the fact that he was born, according to her understanding and her belief, in a Suta family. Because when he was just a little baby and he was in a basket, the person who found him was a pardon? Yeah, he was a kshatriya. He was a charioteer, okay. And his mother was a Brahmin, so therefore Karna was considered to be a suta. Now this bothered him very much because actually he wasn't. He was actually a full kshatriya because his father was the sun god. So, and he felt that within him. He felt that he was a great kshatriya, and yet people were regarding him as a suta. So this bothered him, and he grew up with this inferiority complex that people were not respecting him for what he really was. He didn't know his father yet until later on in the war. So therefore, he wanted to compensate for that feeling of inferiority which he had. And the way he would compensate was that he wanted to be a king. Now, this indicates very clearly why he linked up with Duryodhana. Because when there was a tournament of all of the warriors, and that particular tournament, Duryodhana, for various reasons, made Karna, he made him a king, the king of Anga. Yeah, okay, I got it. So what he did, and when Karna, they had a whole ceremony, the Brahmins were there, they put the water on his head and everything. And so therefore Karna became the king of Anga. And for that reason, he was beholden. He was obliged. He felt responsible to Duryodhana. In fact, even when Krishna tried to persuade him, give up this and just join your brothers, he said, I can't do that. He said, because this man has given me something that I've held very dearly. I always wanted to be a king, and he made me a king. And therefore, it's my responsibility to fulfill that obligation that he gave to me. So therefore, that was one of the reasons. And of course, as he associated more and more with Duryodhana, he became more and more vile and horrible, to the extent that when Draupadi was being stripped in the assembly hall, he was happy. This is the thing that what a Shudra would do, maybe not even. So what we get from that whole thing, as it's mentioned so often, is that by your association, you can go up or you can go down. And although Karna, basically, he had a good father. His father was a kshatriya. He was not great, but he was and had a good mother. He actually respected and loved his mother. But those gentle, warm, kind, sweet qualities were completely overcome by envy and hostility and condescension and all those things. He became like Duryodhana. So therefore, we can really learn a lot by this. And our position has always been, like you mentioned, and by the way, I forgot to mention, I thought many of the points that you made in your class were excellent, really excellent. And we really can learn from those. I mean, you were right in the book, and you expanding on those different sentences. And I personally really relish that kind of class, because what you're doing is expanding on what Prabhupada said and not going off on a limb on some other person's book or this or that. So I thank you very much for that, because there's a great tendency to go off and show off something that nobody else knows or something like that. So thanks so much for that particular aspect of the purport. And again, I come back to Karna. Karna is a pathetic soul. He's not someone you hate or someone you like, but he's just pathetic. He's acting under a psychological impress. And that psychological impress is that he's a kshatriya on the one hand. People aren't recognizing him for that, so he's got to prove it to the world that he is. And that pulls him to the wrong side of the track, so to speak, namely Duryodhana, who gave him kingship.
Thank you. Anybody else have anything they want to say? One last thing. Okay, and then we'll end.
Yeah, thank you for the explanation that you were giving before. So I think it was more or less clear to me that emphasis that you gave, that women should have the opportunity. That explanation that you were giving about whoever knows the science of Krishna consciousness should be encouraged. And we expect to see that. So everyone
Being a woman should not be a disqualification from being a guru.
Yeah.
Being a not advanced devotee should be the disqualification. If somebody's an advanced devotee, whatever body they're in, woman, man, white, black, if they're, you know, yay Krishna tattva veta, say guru hoy, if they actually are an advanced devotee, why shouldn't they be allowed to do that service? Prabhupada was asked about women giving class, and he did say that if a woman can speak to the point, she knows the philosophy and she can speak to the point, she can give class.
So that's my opinion. Yeah. If you allow me to know, there's one, I cannot remember one incident that happened. This is a question now, different okay. than what we're talking. In the Mahabharata, when Ekalavya was refused by the Brahmana to be taught, although he was very expert, I mean to be accepted as a disciple, does anybody know what was the reason why Ekalavya was not accepted? You know, it appears that, you know, according to the teachings, that no one should be barren. And Dronacharya was just teaching all the princesses. And then when this Sudra person wanted to be disciple of Dronacharya, he was refused. He kind of was refused. Maybe Maharaj.
Okay.
Brings out a very interesting point in this. First of all, Ekalavya, his character was a low character. He had a very low character. And one of the reasons Dronacharya didn't want to teach him is because that low character, according to Dronacharya, could not be changed. And if he gave him all the astras that he knew, he would misuse them. Okay? And how do we know this? Well, when Dronacharya refused to teach him, Ekalavya decided that I'll force him to be my teacher. Well, how will you force him? You put up a little idol of Dronacharya and you worship him. And so what happens is that in the course of that, he actually gained many powers. He was an incredible archer. He was, in fact, it was a challenge to Arjuna. And this was a problem. So this went against the guru. On the one hand, he was accepting him as guru, and on the other hand, he was dictating to the guru to give him some powers. That's wrong. If the guru says, no, I can't give you, then you surrender to that, and that's that, you see. So therefore, Dronacharya, seeing his tendencies of doing things himself and not under submission and not under surrender, he felt that this was wrong, and this is actually the reason he would not. So what he did to prevent, this is really fascinating, to prevent Ekalavya from using those powers that he had, yes, exactly, he said, well, are you my disciple? He says, of course. Will you do what I ask you to do? He says, anything you want. He says, okay, I want you to take your thumb and put it on the on this rock here. So he took his thumb, you know, put it on the rock. He says, okay, take your knife, and I want you to cut the thumb off. He didn't even hesitate, he didn't flinch, so he had some incredible good quality, and he just chopped it off, knowing full well that he could never be the great archer that he was at that point in time, because you need your thumb. These things happen so fast that if you have a handicap, that it will prevent you from being as good as some of the greatest that are there. So therefore, that was the... And Bhaktisiddhanta does a whole purport on that, showing that this man was not qualified to have that kind of teaching that Dronacharya could give him. And therefore, he was very offensive by doing what he did. He went against the guru's will.
Mm. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think we should probably stop there, huh? Archita? Uh-huh.
Sutta Goswami that was Pratiloma. It was his father, Roma right. Harshana Sutta, that was Pratiloma.
So what's Sutta Goswami then? If his father wasn't a proper Brahmin, so how could he be a Brahmin?
No, I'm just saying, but it's the different, the specific Pratiloma marriage that you were referring to is the uh-huh. father. Roma Harshana Sutta was a product of a Kshatriya and Brahmana. So he had the training of a Brahmana, obviously, that's why he was sitting on the Vyasa.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I'm looking at my notes now, and I have Roma Harshana Sutta was Pratiloma family. So he was the son of a somebody who's part of a Pratyaloma family. Okay, thank you. Grantaro Srimad Bhagavatam Kijai, Srila Prabhupada Kijai.